Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist. The Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee with our head coach, Chad Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we are here again to answer more of your coaching questions, whether they be cycling or triathlon related. And you can send those to us at trainerroad.com/podcast. We've got a lot of questions to go through this week, guys. And a lot of people have been asking about which training plan to pick.
I don't want to talk about that yet.
And
I want to talk about full pedal. Oh. Just because it's kind of fun.
I guess we technically didn't poach a spin class competition.
No, it's not. There is a spin business in Reno called Full Pedal, and they have AC Schwinn bikes, and there's power meters. I'm using air quotes, power meters on it. And they had a little Thanksgiving competition, teams of nine, and whoever put out the most power had the farthest distance. They have this virtual distance kind of thing based on your weight and your power. And whoever had the most kilojoules, they had this convoluted kind of formula to figure out who would win some Lululemon stuff, and Lululemon sponsored it. So we... as Trainer Road, I felt it was our duty to win this competition. And so we developed a highly stacked team. Chad and Jonathan both, Chad was out of town and Jonathan wissed out.
Yeah, let's be clear here.
And then you went for an outside ride instead.
No, I didn't ride at all.
Oh, I thought you rode.
No, heck no. No, if I could have ridden, I would have been there, but there's no way I could do a 15 minute efforts, I guess.
So there was 15 minute efforts, team of nine.
No way I could do that right now.
Three rounds. Sorry, Jonathan. Three rounds total. So we went two rounds and then a championship round. But we were going against one other group of cyclists, but everyone else was like people who just showed up to class to be spinners. We had like Dave Christensen, who our videographer, who's a international races pro internationally.
Races UCI, like 2.1 stuff. Yeah.
Many Cat 1 riders. Just really stacked team.
Stacked, yeah.
Basically, if you go to a twilight race around here in Reno, they're fast. They're hard races. We have really good racers here. But if you were to take the top 10, we had the top five of that top 10 pretty much that is in every race, and that was on our team.
And so
they all use Trainer Road.
I know.
So that was how we kind of
that's
got,
why they're top 10.
That's well, yeah, true. And that's so how we kind of got first, around
a
it.
Lot of employees too. Our team dropped off. One guy sprained his ankle the night before. I wanted to originally have you two and then Justin Rossi also.
It'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. So next year. And two, the prize, we won the Lululemon ABC pants, which are $120 and
really
a $20 gift card. Yep.
Sweet deal.
That was a sweet deal
for three 15-minute efforts that you would have been training anyway. So
exactly. We asked for the last round to be 20 minutes instead of 15 it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But the other teams were like, no, we can only do 15.
Nice.
But it was fun. And there was a little slight they did a lot better in the last round against us than the earlier rounds, so we were a little worried. But
there was one question that we got this week that was, and this is topical, it was about using spin bikes and somebody saying that they were in a situation where they were on a mountain bike and they weren't going to be able to put a power meter on that bike and they didn't want to put that mountain bike on a trainer, but a spin bike they were looking at getting. What spin bikes did you guys ride and what was the report?
Okay, so we were on the AC Schwinn ones.
Okay.
And the power was not accurate at all.
Okay.
Dave did, I think, 460 watts for 15 minutes.
Which is higher than he's very fit. He's
got
over,
a 330 FTP.
Yeah, and he weighs 135 pounds.
Yeah, so
pounds.
If that were true, he would be winning stages in the Tour de France.
Yeah. Yep.
Like he'd be a stage hunter.
Yep.
It's not true. It depended on which bike you're on, and to normalize, they knew that they weren't accurate. We'd switch rows, so everyone would be on like opposite bikes against the competition. They said that there's supposed to be a head unit update coming out for those bikes that make them more accurate. And then they're also supposed to get a stages style power meter on one of the legs.
That would help.
Yeah. So, and I think,
I'm not sure about the head unit part, but that would help.
I don't know how the head unit would help, but
yeah.
I think they're supposed to get a power meter unit on the leg. So by next year, hopefully they'll have that. But so when I did it, I did and this is all depending on your bike because it was very different. My first bike, I did 340. My second bike, I went way easier and I did 330. And then my final one, I went the hardest yet and I did 260. And I felt so bad because I was next to guys who, one of our employees, Larry, I'm stronger than Larry, just in raw watts.
Yeah, Larry's he's a great downhill and technical mountain biker. Yeah, but he has really been training. Good.
He was a last minute. He replaced somebody last minute.
Yeah.
But he actually replaced you, Jonathan.
That's right.
But he was doing 400 watts next to me, and I was doing 260.
He's the first one to always admit that he hates pedaling. Like, it's like not his bag. So
yeah. So anyways, I could not do a workout on one of those bikes.
Okay.
The P1 pedals, I would still bring those.
Yeah, that's a good solution.
I would trust. I know Stages has a spin bike. I would trust that. Yep. I would trust the Watt bike.
Yeah. And I've ridden that Stages spin bike just with like a power competition that they had at Interbike. Felt great. A lot of adjustability, and it just felt a little more like. It didn't feel like a normal bike, but it felt like there were just small little changes to the touch points that made it feel a little more like a spin bike for a cyclist than just a normal spin bike.
It's a spin bike designed by cyclists.
Did the Schwinn bike stay consistent on the same bike?
We don't know. Yeah. I mean, like, could we switched and stuff? So we know there were hot bikes and people were like, oh, I'm on this bike. And then
put the weak guy on that
Chris
bike.
Chris Bosco, who's in some of our images, he's the guy with the beard. He was on the same bike that I was on for the last one, and he was also struggling. I think he did like 270 or something the first round, and then he did like 380.
He's a TT on a different beast, bike. That guy.
Yeah.
So we
were definitely not putting out, 100 watts difference between rounds.
Makes sense. Yeah, Stages has a few different bikes. I know their high-end one has a power meter that outputs Bluetooth power data and ant power data, so you could use that with Trainer Road, which would be cool. And they're nice units for sure. I would check that one out.
A Watt bike too.
Watt bike has one. And does Watt bike just Amp Plus, right?
I believe it's just Amp Plus.
Yeah, just Amp Plus. And these don't have smart control or anything like a kicker. It won't be controlling resistance, but you'll have power data going out of it, which is cool.
Yeah.
So that's nice. So going back to what I was talking about before we jumped into the full pedal thing, a lot of people are asking which training plan they should pick. And rather than addressing each person's questions, because we've talked about this before, the special snowflake thing, we all are special snowflakes, and it doesn't necessarily mean that each question or each answer will relate to everybody. So over the next month or so, we're going to get a lot of questions like that. And what you can do is go back even two episodes, and we talk a lot about sweet spot base. So that would be back to episode 67, which plan to pick. We talk about how to build out from base, build to specialty. And in almost every situation you're asking this is what I'm planning to do. Is this correct? And everyone's almost correct because they've followed what we're saying. So hey, trust yourself and trust us, and you'll be on the right path. So we'll try not to bore everybody with those ones. Let's go into Paul's question. He says, hi, I'm very new to Trainer Road, and I try and do one or two sessions on the weekend, lightly following sweet spot base, low volume one. So that's the first half of our sweet spot base training plan. I commute to work by bike Monday to Friday, a distance of 24.5 kilometers each way, and do try and keep a consistent speed and heart rate, but it is through London streets and there are traffic lights aplenty.
Oh, that is crazy. Oh, I saw the cyclist in London.
Crazy.
I thought this is a good way to die.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be terrifying. We have it good here in Reno, comparatively speaking. So
he's working on his handling skills or something.
Yeah, there we are. I like that, Chad. Rosie.
And his awareness skills.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. And his gratefulness to just be living and not dead. Is it okay to assign a workout due to the amount of commuting distance per week? I generally get on the turbo first thing on Sunday morning with Justin. Let's answer the first one first before we get into the next one. So is it okay to assign a workout due to the amount of commuting distance per week? So
Paul, first off, I wouldn't do it based on distance. We don't really work in terms of distance here. It's more about the type of workout and how closely you adhere to the requirements of that workout. And I know that if you're on the sweet spot based low volume, I know exactly what that consists of. And they're very specific interval workouts. Even the weekend one, which gets a little less specific, is still pretty structured. So you're not exactly going to be doing the same work. You will be maintaining your training schedule, but the training benefit you're trying to derive is probably being missed unless you're specifically trying to simulate the workout that's prescribed.
Okay, that makes sense. And I kind of assume that what he's thinking is, over all the commutes, he probably adds up to something like 3 hours. Who knows what it is?
Sure, and there's some definite benefit to be derived there, aerobically mostly. And if you're, maybe taking off out of each stop sign or maybe doing some sprints or some harder efforts and sustaining them to mimic, what's prescribed, or at least to incorporate a bit of intensity, then you'll get added benefit on top of that aerobic benefit. But if you're just riding to and from work, just, logging an hour to, hour back, or 24.5K. It would probably be about that, huh?
Yeah.
Then it's probably just mostly low base, low intensity sort of base work.
What would you say to kind of considering that if it's just low intensity stuff? And if, because I know for us commuting here, we have hills everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's really impossible to get in just an easy commute, no matter what, like never touch any high intensity. What would you say to considering that kind of just like icing on the cake? If you're really not going into high intensity stuff, like not factoring that into your training plan, is that something that you would recommend?
If you can do this in addition to the interval workouts, that's fantastic.
Right.
I think it's super useful as long as it's not, you know, setting him back in any way, but that's not, doesn't sound like that's what he's describing.
TSS filler. That's what makes me think of.
Yeah. And that's what they are. And that's again, it can be potentially very useful, but,
TSS filler being an aerobic ride, that's not necessarily 3 hours or 2 hours to get that real long distance aerobic adaption, but just burn some calories in it, throw some more TSS your way. But you can't then, Chad, have a TSS filler replace an interval workout.
No, that's what he's asking.
Yes. And that's the key. You don't want to be counting this stuff up and discounting all the structured work you'd be doing otherwise.
Yeah. This just goes back to the whole, if you don't have a lot of time, you got to compensate with intensity. And if, you know, if you're low on time and low on intensity, there's not going to be a real big stimulus for improvement.
And so just listen to what Chad just said, because you could still like skip your weekend one. You're just not going to get the same improvements. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So don't be like, oh, I should just quit cycling because I can't fit it in. And we understand that sometimes you just can't fit in workouts. I
mean, right.
That's just the way life is.
It's life. Exactly.
But if at all possible, if you have stretches along that course where you can maybe do something, it doesn't have to exactly mimic what we're doing, but
yeah
I mean, I'm
just
guessing.
Based on the streets and the lights,
it'd be tough.
Yeah, especially like getting 3-4 minutes together in a row would be pretty lucky.
Yeah. And we're looking at sweet spot work, which are longer efforts too. So that's
like a 20-minute is not going to happen.
That's a big ask.
Yeah, and intervals in traffic are never a good idea. You know?
Yeah.
Riding in traffic isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
Even sprinting, being the first guy off the line.
Oh yeah.
You don't want to be the first guy. Like, so there'll be groups of cyclists and they'll all pull up, and then like the first guy, you know, if someone's not paying attention going through the intersection, the first guy is the one that gets it.
I always let cars just go ahead of me, and like an NFL player, they're like my screen play. You know what I mean? Like they're running screen for me, so then it's safer.
Especially
I never jump off the line. So,
and in, you know what? It probably happens less in London, where there's so many stops and so many cars, people are paying attention.
Right.
But in Reno, where you have like, I'm thinking of South Virginia and South Reno, where there's like 4 lanes, it's kind of like 50 miles per hour.
It's a mess.
You don't really see the,
you almost easily, want to use the crosswalks.
It's a typical suburban area, not just unique to Reno. It's just typical suburban areas that we see all throughout the U.S.
People could totally not be paying attention to the lights. So just give it a second. And I look, I just see, are there cars coming?
Last thing you want to do is split your attention between, you know, staying alive and doing an intervals workout. Yeah.
This car could hit me, but I really can't deviate from my target.
1 minute off.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah. Do not do that. His next question, he says, I generally get on the turbo first thing on Sunday morning with just an espresso prior to the workouts and a bottle of electrolyte drink after. Is the espresso okay in this case, or does it negatively affect the workout? I really like the podcast, so thanks for those. Many thanks, Paul.
It's mandatory.
Yeah, nothing wrong with espresso at all. Caffeine's got a lot of benefits, whether they're physiological or psychological. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. If you were training by heart rate, which, you know, we don't advocate anyway, but I would say that would be an issue because it can bump your heart rate up a bit and throw things out of whack. But we don't train by heart rate. We train by power, and you're looking for motivation more than anything, and caffeine often provides a little dose of that to just about all of us.
Caffeine is a performance-enhancing substance.
Absolutely.
So much
is.
So that
it
at
is.
The high level, like Olympic level, you can get popped with doping if you have too much caffeine in your system.
Correct.
And people have done that before.
Yep.
There's many products that have caffeine. Lowers your RP. I think I've seen like... Chad, back me up, like 2-4%. Is it 2% or 4%? Like the standard, if you like really dope yourself with caffeine.
Oh, I can't help you there. I can't remember.
You can look it up online, but it's 2-4% is that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Okay. Especially if you just drink some coffee. But the other thing is your if you drink espresso every. I almost said espresso. Someone's gonna kill me.
Yes, thank you espresso very much for not saying that. Yeah.
Every morning. Your body becomes more immune to it and you don't have the same reaction.
Yeah.
What some people will do is they won't have any of their caffeine before like an A race, a big Ironman. Mm. And I just can't do that.
No,
but they won't do it for like a month and then dose really highly in the morning and get that lower RPE and
performance. I'm a pretty steady coffee drinker, and even in the afternoon, I'll have half a cup of coffee before an afternoon ride, and I get that little mental pick me up that's just enough to provide a little bit of motivation.
Chad, I drink while we ride sometimes, right?
Oh yeah, I drink just coffee. About every ride.
I think I drink the most out of us three.
Nate, sure. You clearly do. Yeah, your coffee intake is madness.
It's Olympic level.
Yeah, you're competitive at the Olympic level. Yeah,
you're amongst the best of them.
Jonathan has no experience.
Yep, I don't drink coffee. Is there a Chad? I mean, a lot of people order coffees different ways. Starbucks can attest to that. Is there a certain type of coffee that they should avoid, or a certain type of thing that they should avoid for that type of thing, like pre-workout?
I mean, I wouldn't do a PSL, pumpkin spice latte, oh, yeah. Venti.
No, all you're looking for is caffeine there. Last thing I would do is dose the system. First off, probably wouldn't dose it with sugar unless it were absolutely necessary.
Dairy?
Dairy, absolutely not. Fat, yep. Absolutely not. I mean, some of these things, if you're going into a high intensity interval workout, you don't want this stuff sitting in your gut.
Do yourself a favor, everyone, and just go to black coffee. It's additives, and it's cheaper, it's easier, no calories.
Yeah, it's just a bean.
If you're a man, it'll put hair on your chest. So yeah,
minimal refinement. I mean, it's a downright healthy food.
Let's go into Carlo's question. He says, I have recently started Sweet Spot Base. I have noticed that power zones are very different from heart rate zones, and therefore, whilst I train on Sweet Spot Power Zone, my heart rate zones are mostly in the threshold and VO2 max zones. Is there any issue with that? Should the two be aligned? Which is more important to follow?
Yeah, there's a huge issue with that. Heart rate being highly unreliable and subject to a lot of different factors, which is why we don't, again, train by heart rate. I wouldn't worry about how the two correlate. If, you know, it's of personal interest to you, you can track that over time and see if your heart rate improves relative to your power output. But even then, it's still subject to all those things that can affect it. So simply look at your power. Don't worry anything. Don't worry at all about this heart rate, especially considering the heart rate can be anchored on different things too. Some people anchor it on threshold. Some people anchor it on max heart rate, and it's theoretical anyway. It's just adding confusion to a matter that doesn't have to be that confusing.
Yeah, and I hate when people do track their heart rate like versus power, because it just means that, well, I got stronger with my power. And with all the different things, Chad's drinking actually a Red Bull right now, which his heart rate will be different. That's not, don't, well, we don't have to get into Red Bull. But
it's so my once a week Red Bull, by the way.
I know, just for the podcast, just so it's, he sacrifices his health for all of you.
He dopes himself for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But what I was saying about heart rate, so like for instance, a year ago, I was just coming back from a layoff and I was like, my power was 180 and my heart rate was 180.
Yeah.
Now my power's 180 and my power's 310 and my heart rate's like around 180, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, I don't even know how you would do that. I guess if I was riding still at 180 watts, my heart rate now is like 115 or something.
Right.
But it's cool, it's does that tell me? Like, just follow your FTP
and
up
if your
and
FTP
your power
is going
for
high,
certain
you know,
durations.
You know you're getting faster. As
exactly,
it goes up,
yeah.
Right? And it's a more reliable indication of that. This kind of ties in somewhat to what we talked about last week with interval after interval, seeing your heart rate go up, how that's normal, and it just backs up once again, kind of the variable nature of heart rate. And this is really common, by the way, Carlo, especially for people that are new to training with power, to cause some type of concern with power relating to heart rate. A lot of research has gone into this, and certain people take really strong stances with this being an objective indicator, but the one thing we can say is power is never objective.
I'm looking at some books in Chad's library right now in his office. If someone wrote a book about it, they're usually like, will go to the ground about doing it, especially if that book maybe if it was written 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They still think it's
you
relevant.
Don't want to go back on your word after you
know
wrote a book about it. That would be hard. Yeah. So power is objective. Reliable.
A whole year of training without a heart rate strap on just because it was easier. And now I look at it kind of for entertainment.
Yeah.
I kind of, look how high it is.
Yeah, it's exactly.
The other thing I do, if I'm really struggling with the workout and I can't get my heart rate up, then I might be like, I'm really tired. I should focus more on recovery.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, if I'm always doing 180s and then it's like
the word could
170
is key.
Or 165.
The word could is key, right? It's a possible indicator of something that you'll look into more. Like, it's not like it just like, okay, that data has that, there's the discrepancy, or I'm expecting to see it here, and it's not, therefore I'm making decisions right now. And we don't do that.
My decision too of like better recovery, it's like, oh, I should go to bed earlier tonight. Like, it's a good decision no matter what, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Someone should just mess with my heart rate, so I do those things.
But the fact is, I mean, you could still have an elevated heart rate or a suppressed heart rate or whatever and still get a solid workout in.
Exactly.
So if you were letting heart rate dictate your training, then you might skip a potentially really productive workout. Whereas if you ignore the heart rate, get on the bike, get a couple intervals in, realize, you know, my heart rate's a little low today, but I'm still meeting the power requirements. I'm still getting a solid workout.
Yeah,
that's something you would have missed out on.
It sounds so obvious, but the best indication of whether you can or should bail on a workout is, can you hold the power targets like you should? You know what I mean? It's just,
I bailed on a workout on Monday.
You did?
Yep. I did that full pedal competition on Saturday.
These are Nate's confessions.
It toasted me. And then usually a Sunday I couldn't ride and it was raining here and I just didn't have any, I couldn't
do
it inside and couldn't do it outside.
2 days later, you were still paying for it.
I was. And usually I would wait till Tuesday, but because this is Thanksgiving week, I was like, well, I'll push my stuff forward one day. It was so dumb. Like, I think I could have hit the workout fine on Tuesday, but on Monday, I just adjusted my thing to try to fit stuff in. So now I took I ended that one early. I only got a third of the way through it. Tuesday I skipped. Today's Wednesday, and I'm going to do actually a longer sweet spot based workout because Chad screwed me with the second cross.
Yeah. I forgot I'm on vacation and I thought we were on the same schedule, but turns out we're not. So, Nate's got to make up an extra
following
week.
Chad. Yeah. So I had an extra week in there. So I should be on my recovery week. So that's a good, like, question.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So Nate's got a question.
I got a question.
Did you submit it through genro.com/podcast?
I will. One second.
Cutting to the front of the line.
So we have district championships in 3 weeks from now. And the way that the plan that I was doing it, I was actually going to peak in 2 weeks from now. So this week there's like a 2 week taper. It's a lot of intensity, but less volume. And then the week before is going to be even less, but I have to add an extra week in there. And I'm tired. Obviously, you know, I bailed on my workout on Monday. My plan was today to do some lower intensity sweet spot training. That's like a longer workout, and I'm going to have more time, and we're at work, and I think everyone's going to be gone by like 1 p.m., so I'll be the only one here. And I was going to try to get a lot of TSS and then maybe do one more TSS kind of workout on the weekend and then do the higher intensity, low volumes, higher intensity, low volume stuff next week. And so pretty much follow the training plan after that.
So you're just kind of stepping back a little bit, filling that in with a little bit of lower intensity work.
Yeah, just because I don't feel like I got into that really high intensity one. I just like, ugh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you didn't have it. So you know, back things off a little bit. That might be just the perfect solution for you. You know, alternatively, if you were feeling good going into it, you just extend that.
Redo a week.
Repeat one of your taper weeks.
That's what I did on Monday. I was repeating I think the first week of cyclocross plan because I was like, oh, it's a little bit easier, but I just didn't have it in me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like a well-timed downturn in intensity.
And which is common for me is I've noticed whenever I go through these 4 week blocks at the third week, I'm like weaker at the very end of it. But then after the taper, I get stronger.
That's when you get, I feel the same way. Yeah. Hmm. It's all worth it for those Lululemon pants, Nate. All worth it.
Totally.
Chris's question, he says, great podcast and even better app. Love the latest update to Android that allows me to see my plan. Sweet. Good to hear it, Chris. I have been on Trainer Road for some time and did a full base build and specialty last year. And once again, for those that don't know, if you're going to plan a whole season of racing, we break it up into three consecutive chunks. First, a base phase of 12 weeks, then build phase of 8 weeks, and a specialty phase of 8 weeks. Makes it easier to kind of understand and segment your training and make it a little more flexible for you. He says, I did that last year and doing the same this year. I'm 41 years old, a road racer, and currently on the sweet spot base high volume 2, so the second half of sweet spot base. Under normal circumstances, I'm able to fit in all the prescribed workouts in the plan. However, sometimes life, work, and family throw in a curveball, and I'm unable to complete the day's workout. We feel you there.
I hear you.
Yeah, no doubt. I think everyone does.
I would be a Cat 1 racer.
Oh, yeah.
If we're not for job and family.
You know what's funny too?
that money thing.
Once you get in the position when you do have that job and you do have a family, it's so easy to look back and think, oh man, I would have been great, right? If we could just have the dedication now.
Yeah. It's all you 22, 21-year-olds who just go to school and have a job. You have so much time. Now's the time to be like killer fast.
Truth. So he says, is there a way I can identify which workouts to prioritize over the remainder of the week in order to get the best return? For example, a shift workout two Sundays.
No. For example, as a shift worker.
Oh, as a shift worker. Forgive me. Let me turn up my brightness. There we are. As a shift worker, two Sundays out of every 8 weeks, I am at work and would be unable to get in 3 hours of training. I could shift this workout if it is more valuable than say a Thursday or Saturday or Thursday. Also, the other side of the coin is when I have my leave and I have an abundance of time, should I stick to the plan as prescribed or take the opportunity to add a little more stress? Many thanks.
So,
it's a good question.
In the case of the first question, you're talking about workout prioritization, and that just kind of boils down to typically quality over quantity. You're going to get more bang for your buck when you have to minimize your training and cut out certain workouts by retaining the intensity and kind of ditching some of the longer, more time-consuming stuff. So in the case of most of these, just about all the plans I developed, it's kind of a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule. So if you can keep most of those, all of those preferably, then that'd be my recommendation. Beyond that, you may know that I don't... You're doing sweet spot, so I don't know what your specialty is, where you're headed with this, but if you need that longer ride, maybe that's where you scrap one of those workouts and prioritize the longer workout so that you get that longer, slower sort of stress.
Mm. So out of that week, I'm looking at it right now, Fridays are, I would call the TSS fillers, where their intensity factor is 0.63 or 0.69.
Yeah, those are the first ones to
that
go.
That means easy.
Those are the ones.
Yeah, for those that don't know, that's about 0.6, so that's 60% of your threshold, roughly.
Yeah, that's the light stuff where really we're looking for regeneration. So it's not really even stress that's going to further adaptation so much as allow your body to start absorbing some of the stress that you've inflicted with those higher intensity, higher quality workouts. Mm-hmm.
So should he skip that one or not if he's got a day to skip?
If he needs to prioritize and it's between a Tuesday, Thursday, and a Friday workout, absolutely skip the Friday workout. Yeah.
And then on Tuesday, I say it's like sweet spot intervals and it's 90 minutes and you actually get a lot of TSS. 90 minutes, 95 TSS, intensity factor of 0.8. So averaging around 80% of your threshold.
It's an important one.
Yeah. So I love those ones. If you've only got a couple of days, I would just keep your Tuesday, Thursday workouts, regardless of what day you shift them to.
You mentioned something interesting, Chad, like let's say, cause we don't know what specialty he's going for and you may be listening to this right now and you may be doing sweet spot base, but you're going to be doing century rides or you may be doing sweet spot base and you're going to do crits. So really short efforts. But those sweet spot rides in the beginning of the week like that, those give you benefits regardless of what you're, I mean, all of it will give you a benefit, but these ones, sweet spot's so versatile.
Yeah. It's just muscle endurance and you know, basically basis for FTP improvements. I mean, this is stuff that benefits everybody regardless of the type of rider.
It's funny. I was so excited to go into cyclocross because all the VO2 max work. And now I'm like so excited to go into sweet spot. I'm like, no more VO2 max.
That's the beauty of it. I mean, that's the beauty of periodization. That's why we mix things up. It's not just the physiological aspects, but also the psychological, keeping
you interested.
I'm
getting good at 30 second to 5 minute. I'm getting good at those.
Yeah, right. So
really good.
I actually have a question on that later on. So
yeah, next year you're going to be a beast at the crits, Nate. It's going to be good. So the other question that he had, let's say that he has a lot of time open, so he has a free week, and
So
if he should add icing on the cake.
In that case, you can kind of push boundaries a bit. I mean, knowing or basing it on what's going to follow that week. So you don't want to heap on a bunch of extra stress just because you have the time and then start a whole new training plan and go into it fatigued. Mm. So you do have to keep in mind what comes after. But if you've got the time, you feel up to it, take advantage of it. It's basically doing a mini camp, a training camp sort of thing, or an endurance block. However you deal with it, feel free to heap on some extra stress, knowing that it's going to require a little bit of extra recovery, but you can also reap a bigger benefit than you would have if you just maintained your regular schedule.
So here's my takeaway of what I'm going to do based on those comments there. I'm going on a cruise in February. Mm-hmm. It's during my birthday and Valentine's Day, so we can skip both those holidays. It'll be really nice. I mean, they're all taken care of on the cruise. But the week before that, I'm going to try to do a ton of training, like just pile on that stress, because the cruise, you don't really walk much. You kind of eat a lot of food.
You're going to be great doing recovery there.
I know. I'm going to bring the P1 pedals and maybe do like three workouts, yeah, depending on like the days at sea, which are days where you're not like going, there's not much to do in the days at sea. Mm-hmm. Do something that burns a lot of calories, probably some sweet spot type stuff, not anything too intense, but I'll watch a movie while I do it. And I load my iPad up with movies and it'll be great.
Yeah.
Solid approach, because I'm it's going to be a relaxing week.
Again, I mean, dump on the stress knowing that you're going to get to recover. But my word of caution is that just make sure the vacation is going to be what you think it is. I've done the same thing, carried a bunch of fatigue into it. And then we end up making it a really active, lots of hikes, yeah, and ocean time and things that are basically pretty still physically stressful. And I come back and I haven't recovered. I'm still kind of buried a bit.
I've already scheduled my massage. And and with the kids, so we have a five and a 3 year old, and we can't. We'd really love to do that active stuff, but I know what it's going to be like.
Well, and on top of it, you also have to consider it, if you really bury yourself and you come into this vacation kind of flat mentally, psychologically, what sort of impact does that have on
the vacation?
On the vacation, yeah.
I was just thinking the difference between when we go to Disneyland. Like, Disneyland is serious business. You cannot go in.
You're putting out lots all day.
I should taper for Disneyland. Yeah.
But if you're run down, and I mean mentally, you're not really engaging with your family the way you hope to on a vacation, that's a bit of a
I plan on floating in the pool and have my kids jump around me.
Like, well, you know, to further
I know what you're
point,
saying, though.
I do the same thing when I'm going to travel to like a clinic or a symposium or a conference like I've been doing lately. And I try to pile on the stress, and then I go there and I'm not sharp intellectually. Oh, yeah. And so maybe the first day or so is kind of wasted on me. I struggle and some of the stuff just kind of bounces off me. So again, you know, consider just, you know, how well you deal with that fatigue, what its impact is on the days afterward.
And part of that traveling itself is fatiguing. You just went across the country to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
How was that, by the way?
Cooks me. I'm going to form a little synopsis of both the USA Cycling Coaches Summit and the Innovations in Training with Power for Endurance Sports. It's kind of a mouthful, which was just crazy interesting. Learned a whole lot, and there's a lot of fun stuff coming down the pipe too.
Cool. So next week, maybe?
Yeah, I'll try to summarize
next
that
podcast
a little more succinctly and let you know where those innovations are going and how, you know, we're going to try to make use of them, which, you know, involves a conversation with Nate. but I'll try to catch everybody up on all the fun stuff I learned.
Ooh, nice. It's a teaser. So let's go into Henry's question. He says, in the past, I've been more of a recreational rider doing centuries and doing okay on medium to longer Strava climbs. I'm not sure what he means by medium to longer, but that really is all relative. But however, in the last few months, I've been riding with the local road racers. When I ride with them, the accelerations have me struggling and occasionally dropped. When we hit a big climb, I'm quickly spat out the back as they accelerate and hit it at 500 plus watts. I can keep them in sight and overtake a few on the way to the top if I hold my own pace. However, on shorter power climbs, I do get dropped and find myself in difficulty. These are guys with an FTP of 300 to 350 watts. I'm currently at 260. My question is in two parts. Number one, how should I adapt my training to improve my shorter-term power efforts? And let's go to that one first.
Yeah, so Henry, you talk about these guys having bigger watts, and I'm going to assume that body weight's similar. So they're applying power, and they're ditching you because they're stronger. So obviously, you want to get stronger, and that's just a matter of raising FTP. The short efforts don't really come into play there, at least not in terms of on the race course. It sounds like something you're just not training. So like Nate just said, I mean, he's a sweet spot steady state sort of guy, but he's been working on cyclocross activities or efforts and prepping for those races and being really specific in that preparation. And now he's getting good at those efforts. Mm-hmm. So you basically have to train those. The beauty of this is anytime you lift your power at VO2 max or get better at working at high percentages of your power at VO2 max, it has an influence aerobically. So there's downstream effects and your FTP, or at least paves way for FTP improvements if it doesn't actually elicit those improvements. So you can train for these shorter, harder efforts. And that means, you know, once you get past whatever your base training is, maybe you choose a plan that's a little more suited to the type of racing you plan to do now, which is another question you have to ask yourself. I mean, are you the guy who can work back onto the group you just got spit off of? Or do you want to be able to go hard with them, stick with them on the climbs, and then figure it out after that? So you have to train based on how you want to perform, and you have to train based on, you know, what sort of racing you plan to do.
So I've got some comments I want to share on this, but I want to go into his next question because it would blend in perfectly with what you were saying there, Chad. His next question, he says, is this something I should address now, this early in the season? And he mentions I'm training for 2017 when they have suggested I could race on their team. So I assume the road racers he's with. If not, when should I do this? Love the show. 5 stars for sure. Thanks.
Well, this is exactly what I'm talking about, is you can train VO2 max efforts now and have an impact on FTP. So it's not as though you're just sharpening to be able to do these efforts in a race, whereas you're using these efforts to improve physiological systems in a more general sense. So you can do them now. The concern is if doing them now is going to, you know, negatively impact what the training you have that comes next.
Yeah.
So you don't want to burn yourself out with a bunch of VO2 max work and then dive into sweet spot base and then your build plan and then your specialty plan.
Sounds like what I'm going to do. Is across.
It can work. It can work though. I mean, some bodies respond that way. I mean, some bodies, you know, maybe you've been doing this for a long time, or maybe you're new to it. In any case,
it seems kind of new. I mean, just getting into racing, he said he's more of a casual guy.
I think, right, what I see this, Henry, is you're focusing on the icing and not the cake.
You're getting really specific kind of early.
Because you're saying, sorry, Chad, but he's saying, I'm getting dropped because it's these big, sharp efforts. But I would argue that even if they wrote steady, you would get dropped if we're assuming you're at the same weight. If you're at 260 FTP and they're at 300 to 350,
yeah.
I don't care how much VO2 max you're doing, you're not going to keep up with a guy at 300 or FTP of 350. Yeah.
Here's the interesting thing. When people go and ride with a fast group ride, like a drop group ride or a race or anything else, they usually get dropped on the climbs, but it doesn't necessarily, and you assume, you perceive at that moment that I'm not as good of a climber as these guys. But
yeah, it's quote unquote climbing.
Disregard the climbs and then look at the effort throughout the whole race prior to that. They're able to carry that pace with a lot less, I guess, it's a lot easier for them to carry that pace, right? They have a higher threshold, whatever pace they're holding at. They're also, don't discount the importance or the weight of technique and tactics and experience here. When these guys are riding as a group, they are very good at conserving energy and making sure that they're going through these things just as efficient as possible.
Yeah, speaking of the convert, sorry, Chad, I'll interrupt you one more time. Everyone on the podcast is listening. Is like, stop interrupting Chad. I don't care about you, Nate. But I was watching the Specialized wind tunnel videos this morning, and it just, they're talking about drafting 40% less work. Mm. Like, so you save 40% of your energy.
Yeah.
And geez, like if he's going on the flats and he's sitting in with people 40% less, and then it gets up high and then they just put a little punch on, he doesn't get that 40% benefit as soon as it turns up and suddenly you're off.
And you learn to read the road. You know what's coming up. You see different undulations. You kind of know not to get behind, so that if the road just hits a little fluctuation, I mean a really small change in grade, you know to carry a little more momentum into that, get a little closer to that wheel perhaps, so then you don't have to.
But even tactics aside, I mean, if you just look at the conditioning, Henry, I have good news for you in that you're probably, my guess is you're going to do sweet spot base one or two. You're probably going to take that approach. And you'll start to see this VO2 max work, little bits of it sprinkle into as early as that seventh week. So you're not too far out from a point where you're actually going to start addressing this limitation, start targeting it, and you'll start to recognize it on the road.
Yeah, your fitness is going to go up. Your experience is going to go up before long, Henry. You should be hanging with or dropping them. So,
and just based on what in this one paragraph of writing, I think he should do general build and then rolling road race.
Yep.
I agree.
And that for a good amount of road racers, that's a great approach to take. You know, it helps. A lot of road races.
Unless you know the format of your road races are long sustained, you know, hour-ish climbs, then rolling road races the best bet in most cases.
Certainly. Gina, she says, hi guys, I've been enjoying the podcast for a while. I finally started using Trainer Road now that it's out for Android, and it's great. Good to hear. so easy to use and train with. We've put a lot of effort into that Android app, so it's really good to hear this. We appreciate it. And I think it looks fantastic too. So my question is about normalized power. I've noticed sometimes there's a large discrepancy in normalized power as calculated by different sources. For example, this morning I rode Shasta. That's one of our workouts, which, as you know, is a pretty easy ride with 7 hard 20-second efforts. My average power for the ride is 98 watts. Strava gives me a weighted power of 119 watts, which weighted power, that's their version of normalized power.
But it's not the same calculation.
Exactly. It's a different name
You can't compare them.
It's a different name and a different way of going about getting that data. Strava Stix, which is a plug-in for Strava, gives me weighted power, and they claim to use the Dr. Coggan formula of 143 watts. Trainer Road gives me normalized power of 136 watts. What gives? Why are they so different?
Yes, so this is, as a software engineer at heart, gives me heartburn, but I know we're doing it right. Because, so what we do is, in software engineering, you have things called unit tests or integration tests. And what we have are many different power files that represents different stuff. And what we've done is we've uploaded those same power files to Training Peaks and WKO. By the way, Training Peaks WKO don't always give the same number. They're usually, they could be like one normalized power or TSS off because of rounding issues that they have in different code bases. But so what we do is we see ahead of time what their numbers are, and then we then process our file and compare those. And that runs many times a day, because what happens every time code is checked in, we do regression checks against regression, meaning make sure we didn't break anything that we've, as we fix something else, make sure we didn't break something else. Mm-hmm. And those tests run to validate those numbers. So I'm very confident that our normalized power for a workout is the same one. So if you can download that ride, you can download it as a TCX file and upload it to Training Peaks itself, and then view the data, then you should get the same normalized power in TSS. Mm. What happens sometimes is people will contact us and say, hey, the TSS is different between this ride I did on Trainer Road and then when I uploaded it to Training Peaks. And every single time the difference is because their FTP is set differently in the two.
In one app.
Yeah. So the normalized power should be the same, because that has no bearing on what your FTP is. But if your FTP is set in 300 in one app and 200 in another, same workout, you'll get more TSS, more training stress.
Different IF, different intensity factor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and then Gina, if you can, if you uploaded the Training Peaks and the normalized power is different, please email support@trainer.com and we'll jump on it. We'll add that workout file as a unit test and we'll figure out what's wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm fairly confident. I mean, I'm very confident in our numbers are right.
And I don't know why the other ones are different. There are so many different variables that could be going into this. But that's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
This.
And we do it the same way of, as Training Peaks does, but some things that if you have a gap in your file, like how you process that, if you have zeros in your file versus nulls in your file, and there's a bunch of tactical things. But.
And a lot of these plugins that piggyback on top of Strava, they may be processing the files at different rates. They might be skipping some data. Who knows what they're doing to the data that you're giving it as well. So
yeah, here's an example. So let's say you're going 1 minute really hard at 300 watts, then you pause your Garmin for 1 minute, and then you start your Garmin again and go for 1 minute at 300 watts. So now is that a 3 minute interval with 1 minute rest, or is that just a 2 minute interval? So that's some stuff that you just have to make sure that we just use Training Peaks as a source of truth, and we make sure we're doing it the same way they are. So think about those kind of things.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you're comparing apples to apples, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's an example of something that could mess up other software. Yeah.
Right. Let's go on to Scott's question. He says, I ride pure flat pedals with 510s, and when I do isolated leg drills, or when isolated leg drills come up, I usually just try max sprints or ignore it. Are there other optional drills to do for folks who ride flats? And one quick thing before you jump in there, Chad, 510s are the shoes that he's using. They're specifically for flats that have really sticky rubber.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Basically I would just swap the single leg focus drills. I mean, you don't have to completely bypass the single leg aspect of the drills, but obviously you're not going to have anything of an upstroke. Nothing's holding you to that pedal. So I would just use the single leg focus drills, where you basically just give a little more attention to a leg, but both legs stay on the pedals. Mm-hmm. And then of course it sounds like you're a mountain biker of some sort. So feel free to substitute any sort of drill that you think is more specific and beneficial to your particular discipline.
And I've seen, so my brother rides 510s and flats, and I don't know if he just has vicious pedals, but I've seen him do single leg drills before.
Oh, it
before.
Can be done, yeah.
Because those things, those shoes for flats and flat pedals, good flat pedals, it's amazing the grip you have. It's almost like it embeds itself in that shoe. And you can get traction enough to actually put force on those pedals throughout the pedal stroke. You won't be pulling up vertically, but you'll
grip back. So the back over the top and the down are probably all still there. And the upstroke, all you have to do is let your other leg compensate for that. So you can still do them.
With Ryan Leach's bowl theory, where you do hops and bunny hops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's you're pushing back on the pedals, and it's that grip that you get with flat pedals that make that you're pushing forward on with the handlebars and pulling back with the pedals.
Yeah.
So you can actually, without being clipped in, pull your bike up. It's a weird feeling once you get it.
Yeah, but it's very much true. It's talking about pressing outward like that. And that's what you'll be doing with those. So, and once again, Scott, I'm not sure what your setup is exactly, or if you have some pedals like I've seen other people have, but.
And so in general though, I skip the single leg drills. I'm not ruining my workout, right?
No. All those drills are optional. They're all based on, is this something that will probably benefit me? Is this something I need to work on? Is it going to help me ride a little more, you know, economically, a little smoother? Mm-hmm. Is there some obvious benefit in this for me? You don't just have to blindly follow them.
And sometimes they pass the time.
Yeah,
that's probably my number one reason for adding them. Is just sometimes it's a drag to do 20 minutes and then another 20 minutes and then another 20 minutes when you can add just a little bit of something to dress them up a bit, keep your mind off the fact that you have 20 minutes of work ahead of you.
And to represent the other side of the coin, I know last year when I was coming back from this imbalance issue that I had and everything else, they really did give me a time of focus on making sure that my pedal stroke was aligned. And it was very beneficial. I was able to really knock out that hatcheting that you get with a knee when it flies out and cuts in, which you see a lot of cyclists do. And I was able to kind of focus on that and really make progress. So they can absolutely.
Yeah, there's definitely benefit to be had, but they're in no way required.
Right. Nick, I am currently dedicating 5 to 7 hours per week on my smart trainer in an effort to get my FTP as high as possible before the start of the race season in March. How many interval or sustained effort workouts should I do each week during my base and in-season training? He says, I'm usually not very sore the day after a tough one-hour workout on the bike. Is it better to do longer workouts less often or more shorter high-intensity workouts? How many times per week?
That can basically be a wash, Nick. It all depends on, you know, what type of training you're doing, for what you're doing that training. This just talks to what the structure of our base build specialty is. I mean, we try to eliminate all this heavy lifting for you, such that you basically just have to show up and the workouts are structured for you. As far as, you know, how many high intensity workouts you can get away with in a week, that typically boils down to 2 or 3. There's a pretty good return. This has been substantiated over a whole lot of years and studies. Pretty good return on a couple high intensity workouts. That third one comes in a marginal benefit. It's not a whole lot greater than the couple that preceded it. And then when you add that fourth one, you actually kind of start to go backwards. And this assumes, you know, a standard level of fitness. There are athletes who can benefit from that fourth day, but they're rarities. And then, you know, as far as interval workouts versus sustained effort, again, what type of athlete are you? What type of season, what time of year are you in? You're talking about base season in this case. So, you know, the most of the base training veers more towards those sustained efforts, and the higher intensity interval stuff gets sprinkled in later. There's no hard, fast rules, but again, you know, we try to eliminate all this guesswork and thinking for you and provide the structure with the plans.
Let's move on to Chris's question. He says, hey guys, love the podcast and have listened to many, but not all of them. I'm 45% through, sweet spot. I thought he was going to say 45% through the podcast. This is going to be very precise.
We should add tracking to the website.
Right, exactly. Through sweet spot mid volume. That's once again, the mid volume version of our sweet spot plan currently. But before I get too far into it, I just want to pass this question by you. I do have a 1UP trainer, but I love riding my rollers. My rollers do have magnetic resistance adjustability. And usually the way that works is like a dial in the back that just moves a magnetic plate closer. So it's not like a dynamic adjustment. It's just like it's a fixed thing, so that we'll know. He says, and so far I've been able to keep my watts output or my power output to within the requirements of the workouts. I've recently tested my ability to ride longer intervals by completing the 3x20 minutes interval sessions on week 3 of mid volume sweet spot and was successful. The only thing I'm missing is being able to get out of the saddle and do the very short sprints asked of me during these early phases of sweet spot training, nor have I been able to do the one-legged drills. On the other side of the coin, I have been able to develop a very smooth pedal stroke and can get up to 145 RPM on the road on spin-ups. So my question in short is, am I getting enough auxiliary training based on the demands of rollers? I suspect that if I'm not able to perform workouts that are to come, I will need to change over to the trainer. But are the rollers fine for now as long as the watts I am asked to generate are met? Signed, a 5-star Trainer Road fan.
Yeah, they'll probably be fine for most of the sweet spot work you do. But you talked about not being able to do those, you know, those high intensity efforts, and those are kind of fundamental to what we're, one of the things we're trying to accomplish during that sweet spot phase, that base phase. And you're going to miss out on those. How big of an impact is that going to have? You know, it might not be that big a one, but it's probably going to have some impact. So you just have to decide, you know, the things that you're bypassing, the pedal stroke drills, are those important to your personal performance, what you're going to, or your personal capabilities, what you want to be able to accomplish, in which case, you know, the rollers aren't the right fit. Personally, I think rollers are excellent for the lower intensity steady state stuff. Yeah. But when you start to get into that harder stuff, especially the really hard stuff where there's a greater chance of losing your balance and falling over or just not meeting the target requirements, the power requirements, I don't think the rollers are the best fit for that sort of training.
Yeah, as intensity goes up, you should definitely look to the trainer more. The one thing that I'd like to say is you can still stand up on the rollers. You can still do that. I can stand up on rollers. The only thing is it builds a very different, just like riding on the road. Like you said, you mentioned that you have a more refined pedal stroke, but you ride the rollers very differently than you ride when you're just riding down the road. And when you stand on the rollers, you stand very differently than what you would be doing on the road. So I know there are some rollers that have like a boom rack and they try to make it a little easier to replicate something that you would have in an outdoor scenario. It does help. I've ridden those. It does help somewhat, but yeah, it's still a different ball game. So yeah, I agree with Chad, and I use the rollers for low intensity workouts. I love it. But
and in terms of pedal stroke refinement and steady state efforts, I think they're very useful, but I don't think they're the right tool for every job.
Yeah.
And play devil's advocate. And I bet there's somebody listening to the podcast right now saying, on my trainer, when I stand up, it is also different
than
on the road.
This is a great point. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's so different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your weight distribution is totally different than what you would have when you're not on a bike. So, or when you're on the trainer versus.
Yeah, just an argument for specificity. I mean, you can do a lot of training indoors, but you do have to do something that as closely as possible emulates what you're going to face outdoors.
Yeah. And you could certainly argue that rollers with a boom rack that allow that type of thing could give you a much more realistic experience standing up than on a trainer. So
perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely valid. I think the more important concern is the as the workout specificity and intensity increases, sometimes it gets tougher to fall.
Yeah, I think when you get outside, it's about your aerobic system kind of, and if my FTP raises up, let's say like it has like over 100 watts in a year, and then I go outside and I get out of the saddle and I haven't done any outside riding, it's not like, oh my gosh, it's all gone now, yeah, right?
Right.
Like I suddenly can't ride out of the saddle. It just kind of works. So the one thing that I would do outside, fitness wise for specificity is sprinting. Mm-hmm. I would never do that inside because that is way different.
Totally.
And it's like especially you tear your bike apart too on the trainer.
Yeah. There's no point.
Like a full sprint.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's go into David's question. He says, should I retest FTP when changing from PC, from our PC app to our new Android app? And also if I've changed to a trainer tire. It's just that I've just retested, and while I expected a drop from my last test in the summer at my peak this year, I didn't expect such a big drop.
Darn it.
That's how all of us feel, right, when we get back into it. I'm not despondent about it. It should mean there are big gains to be had. Oh, an awesome podcast, 5 stars from me. So quick thing on this. I think, a question where we can get into something a little more than just these specific examples, like when should you retest and how can you compare those results? We'll talk about that.
Between PC and Android, it's the same code base, no different FTP test. If you're using virtual power and you have a new tire on, yes, you should retest. If you're on a trainer where the power is measured in the unit and you don't have a power meter, so this would be like the Powerbeam Pro, they have a spin down test on it, mm-hmm. but I would still maybe retest, even though the spin down is supposed to calculate the
it totally changes that. I've used the power beam before and I've noticed that, and it's nothing against it's just a different variable and that stuff can be kind of hard to track. But I went to a tire that had just like a winter tire. So it had some ribs in it versus a slick. Noticed a big difference.
Yeah. So the spin down is supposed to calculate the rolling resistance there. So if you do change tires or have different pressures, it's not supposed to do it, but I don't think it would be a bad thing. But my FTP drops, if I don't train, it goes down so quickly.
So quick.
So quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a high pressure situation.
Chad's smiling and nodding.
Yeah. Yep. It happens. I mean, it depends on the sort of fitness you've cultivated and, you know, what your layoff, you know, how long it was, what you did or didn't do over the course of it. I mean, you can see some sharp, sharp drops, but, you know, ideally you're looking at things on an annual or even a seasonal basis. And each time you embark on a new season or a new year, you've got last year's or last season's data to compare to, and you're starting at a higher place, ideally.
Yeah. If you change a power meter, probably like from one brand or model to the next, probably a good idea to retest. It's hard to compare that data. Ideally, in a perfect world, we'd be able to compare.
And retesting on the power meter too.
Retesting doesn't have to be an FTP test. You can do like a 2x20 or a 4x10 threshold sort of workout, and you can get a sense of, okay, this is truly sustainable power. I could do this for long lengths of time. I think I'm going to set my FTP here. I mean, you can be a little informal about it. I wouldn't recommend that unless you've been doing this for long enough to know what's, you know, reasonable and what isn't.
Like, I switch between my Quark and Stages.
I've found those two to be really close as well.
Yeah, I have. One of my bikes too has a Quark and a Stages at the same time, and they're just spot on. Like, they're within the tolerance of 1.5%.
Right. So
yeah, I've gone back and forth between four different power meters, and there's never been enough of a difference to concern me.
Yep. Yeah. So there are some, and it won't hurt you to retest unless it goes completely against what you need to do in your training plan. That's another thing to keep in mind. So, let's move on to Alex's question. He says, "Hey guys, huge fan of the podcast." And he actually put in 5 stars in his question there.
Actual stars.
Just so you know, Alex, that doesn't count. You need to put it into iTunes. So I hope you did that. he says, "I'm a marathon cross-country mountain biker. Just completed Leadville last year, thanks to your workouts, and will be doing a couple shorter 60-milers next year." That'll be a lot longer than 60 minutes. I'm about to begin sweet spot based mid volume, but have a question on nutrition during longer rides. I generally don't eat on workouts lasting less than 60 minutes, but for the longer weekend rides, what would you recommend? I'm a firm believer in training how you race, and when racing, I usually have goo gels and the occasional picky bar. But with the lower intensity nature of the Sunday aerobic ride, should I really be eating that much straight sugar? Would it be smart to also include some protein and fats during the workout? Thanks in advance for your help.
That's a great question.
It'll boil down to the intensity you maintain. So when you talk about racing and having goo gels, I'm betting you're racing and you're working harder and you actually need that sugar because you just don't have enough on board to sustain that sort of intensity. But when you go out and do these lower intensity rides, the long Sunday rides, those are at an intensity level where, you know, depending on how well adapted you are, how aerobically adapted you are, you may or may not need them. Just know that if you're trying to further aerobic adaptation and you're dumping sugar into a system that doesn't really need it, it's going to fly in the face of that end game. As soon as that sugar enters the system, fat metabolism basically shuts off. So if you're trying to ditch a little extra weight and you're dosing your system with sugar every hour on the hour sort of thing, not going to burn a whole lot of fat. There's a lot of downside to it. So if you don't need it, don't use it. Determining what you need, what intensity starts to, because you're burning fat and sugar at every intensity. And all muscle fibers to some extent process both sources of fuel. You just have to decide, you know, I can work at 70% of threshold. I'm pretty good aerobically. I don't need anything. But once I bump up to 75, maybe 80%, that's when I, after a couple hours, start to feel pretty flat and probably need a little sugar. I actually probably needed it prior to that. But a little bit of trial and error is in order. But if it's truly low intensity, I've gotten to the point where I can do 4-hour rides on nothing more than water if I keep the intensity dialed down to, you know, under 70%.
Alex, I'm also a firm believer in train the way you race. But for these rides, it's not at race pace. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it doesn't need to then simulate. That's kind of what Chad's
saying.
That's
the simple answer. Yeah.
Just to translate what Chad just said.
He took 10 seconds to say what I said in 3.
So
I really care about all of this, but I have nothing to add. You guys summed it up perfectly.
Yeah. So what I'm doing for my longer ones is I'm trying to eat just pretty much nothing. Like if I can get through it at the intensity that I'm shooting for and I don't eat anything and I feel okay and my power didn't drop off, hooray.
And that's right? It. That's what I mean by this experimentation. You come back and you're flat and a little bit lightheaded and you just can't process and maybe the next ride doesn't go so well. Obviously you overdid it. So you just have to, you know, kind of mess with it. But the fact is we're aerobic athletes. We want to cultivate that aerobic system, that ability to metabolize fat.
I also bring, for those longer rides, I if they're outside, I bring extra food just in case. Because
perfect strategy. I carry it
all the time and don't eat it.
Yeah, I talk about 4-hour water rides. I don't go out there with just water. I mean, I have food on my body should I need it. I have a credit card and money.
Always a good idea.
So have it. You know, don't unnecessarily risk your well-being.
Right,
but if you don't need it, don't eat it.
There's also a good 56 mile loop around here. That there's a big climb up a thing called Geiger. I just posted a picture on it from Instagram. But the first time I did that, it's actually the second ride I'd ever been on the bike. And halfway through, I was with some people and we had to stop at a pizza restaurant. We ordered pizza. Yeah. It was one experienced guy and two people were brand new and he just thrashed us. And we sat for like 2 hours and ate pizza before we could get home. We were just so shaky and like could barely walk.
If you're the type of rider who, if you need it or don't need it and you're hitting that gel or, you know, whatever source of overt sugar every hour or, you know, more so, you've got a system that's going to make this process a little more difficult. Mm-hmm. Than someone who's been bypassing or foregoing that interim nutrition.
And one thing to keep in mind is I do have something to add to this actually, but yes. I step.
You can stay on the podcast.
Yeah.
You're not fired.
Yeah. I step my way into this as well. Like if you know that you've been racing all summer and you've been fueling appropriately.
Yeah, it's a process.
And then you're going back to doing a lot of these longer rides. Then ease your way in with that. If you're going to have rides that are shorter and start off with just no sugar going into it like that, something like that, or you're just going to hold off a little longer into that ride every week before you have that sugar and hopefully get to the point where you don't need it, whatever it may be. But I usually get to the point where after a month, I am doing 5-6 hour rides and I'm just doing them on water. The intensity is low. But, you know, just doing them all.
I feel like I've stepped, if you listen way back in the podcast, I always had like Gatorade and stuff. And then because of this podcast, I stopped doing that. I feel like I've gone way more to the no food during the ride. And then recently I've done some other more higher energy stuff and I've added a little bit of sugar back in. And now I feel like when I go back to those longer rides,
responsive.
I know I'm like, I need more sugar. I need more sugar.
Nah, you won't.
I know, but I mean, it's just the feeling of like stepping into it.
Yeah.
Like I can break through it, but it's just, I didn't get that feeling before and now I'm getting it again because I've been adding it into my system on different workouts.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, let the intensity and how you feel dictate, you know, what you put into your body. But just know that, I mean, this is why you can see athletes who on the surface are very healthy. They look athletic, they're lean, they're thin. But the fact is metabolically they could be falling apart inside. I mean, this can lead to some pretty hefty consequences down the road.
Type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I'm all sorts of metabolic disorders, not to mention heart issues, cancer. I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't attribute to this high sugar intake and this high blood glucose.
And correlations.
There are strong correlations.
Correlations.
Yes. Strong ones.
All right. And with that, we'll wrap it up for this week. Thanks everybody for submitting your questions. You can do so at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad on Twitter or on Instagram, and you can find us on Snapchat at TrainerRoad. Keep your eye on that. I'll be answering a bunch of questions over this weekend. It's a holiday for us here in the US, but I'm going to have a good amount of downtime. So I'll be answering some questions on there. So yeah, thanks everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks everyone.
Bye-bye.